Thought I muted everybody. Okay, there we go. So welcome everyone to the Peace Alliance Action Call for the month of July. My name is Dan Kahn, and I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance. And I'm so grateful to have you all here with us. I'm going to go ahead and go over the agenda, and then we'll roll right into it. In a moment, I'm going to introduce Ngozi Ekosia, and then she's going to introduce our special guest for the month, Georgette Todd. We're going to hear from Georgette for about 10 minutes, and then we'll have a chance for question and answer and discussion with her. And then after that, we're going to have an update from Nancy Merritt on the Department of Peacebuilding. After that, we're going to have some coaching on the monthly action. So everybody who registered for the call at least an hour ago should have received an email in your inbox with a link to the action sheet for July. So please, if you haven't already, sometime in the next half hour, go ahead to your email if you can access that, and get that, click that link, take a look at the action sheet. Sorry, I'm navigating the muting question. And have that action sheet available because we're going to have some coaching and review of it. And I'm very excited about the action for this month. After we have coaching on that, we're going to have a chance for shares from the field. So we'd love to hear anything that's going on with you in your peacebuilding world. That'll be for the last 10 minutes or so of the call. So now I'm going to introduce my partner in this work this month, Ngozi Ekosia. And it's always been a pleasure to cooperate with Ngozi. I find it really nourishing just to connect and cooperate. And I want to do more than just sort of my personal introduction of Ngozi. I want to share with you a little bit about her. I'm going to read from her bio because I read it today and I learned some stuff which I had forgotten, and some of it is directly relevant to what we're talking about tonight. So Ngozi, well, first of all, is on our leadership council, and she's the council member for the cornerstone of cultivating personal peace building. Some folks might be aware the Peace Alliance looks at what we call the five cornerstones of peace building: cultivating personal peace building, empowering community peace building, teaching peace in schools, humanizing justice systems, and fostering international peace building. So Ngozi's focus is on cultivating personal peace. She's an educator, counselor, coach, and minister with a master's degree in social work. She's worked in higher education for 20 years in the California Community College system, and she served the last 16 years in the Extended Opportunity Programs and Services Programs, which is a Title V student support program that was birthed out of the civil rights movement. And Ngozi's personal narrative is one of resilience, faith, and empowerment. She's an emancipated foster youth herself of the state of California due to early childhood neglect and abuse. Her life experiences with domestic violence, early childhood and workplace bullying, and feelings of hopelessness motivated her to desire to support herself and others to overcome the painful traumas of violence in all its forms and to be a beneficial presence on this planet. And this is what led her to the Peace Alliance in 2005. So you can see why I wanted to share that with you, because it's so relevant to what we're working on and learning about in tonight's call. So without further ado, it's my honor to introduce my dear friend Ngozi. And before you start with your introduction, Ngozi, I realize I don't see Georgette visually. So do you know, was she going to join by phone or by video?
By phone.
Okay. I'll just ask her if she could send you a text to let you know what her phone number is in the next few minutes, so I'll know how to unmute her at that point. So Georgette, if you're hearing me, please send and go see a text and let her know what your phone number is so I can unmute you when the time is right. Over to you, Ngozi.
Okay, wonderful. Hello, everyone. Thank you, Dan, for such a beautiful, that's so surprising. It lands on me in such a beautiful way. I really appreciate that. I appreciate this call. Probably it's going to be my most empowering call of the year and pretty much all the calls that we've been on, because Georgette represents, and I represents, and tons of other children in the world who are adults now, represent trauma in childhood that wasn't addressed. And I feel grateful that we have grown up and did something and had the influences of people like yourself who are out there advocating for restorative justice, people who are social justice advocates, all of the practitioners in the field who are doing any type of work towards peace and violence in any of its forms. I'm really grateful for everyone who does this work, because it is a work that is worth doing. And to me, it's the only thing worth doing, because it's about our humanity and building a better future for our children, so that this world looks like a really beautiful flowering place with many diverse ways that we express as human beings. So I'm deeply grateful to introduce Georgette Todd. And I have her book here. I was in a meeting and I met Georgette. I'm going to let her talk a little bit more about her professional experience, but I will say that we share the same profession. Both of us are social workers, and it just seems like that seems to be a trend with many of the people who go in, who come out of foster care. There's just this need to want to go back into the community. She wrote a book about her experience in foster care and how she got through a system that really so many young people don't get through. And those that do get through often get through more harm than how they came in. And very few rise to the ability to do really more than what they're capable of because of some of the conditions they get caught up in the situation, in different situations. And then these other little folks that might have challenges with workplace development and things like that. So it's just everywhere. And I wanted us to highlight her and highlight her work and celebrate her. And so, Georgette, if you're there, I'm checking my phone. I haven't gotten anything. So, Dan, I don't know.
Okay, let me see. She's either in 973 or 619 or
619.
Okay, 619.
Try that one. Yeah, try 619.
Georgette, is that you?
Yes. Hi.
Fantastic. We got it.
I heard everything. I kept saying hello, hello, hello.
Thank
I've
you,
been
Georgette.
On since the beginning. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
I just wanted to say thank you for having me on this call, and I am here to answer any questions.
Wonderful. And Georgette, a part of what the 10 minutes was about, I got your email, is really just sharing a snippet of your story of resilience, and that's what I call inspiration for us, and how your work now is a part of building, advocating, supporting this opportunity to inform people about trauma, provide awareness, and obviously tools and possibly solutions that that anyone might be able to take away and apply today. Or be able to find a resource if you have that. So it's just very open to what your heart feels.
Okay. Thank you for that. And so why I am speaking out now as a former foster youth, it's like I said, or like Ngozi said, you know, she saw me at a training, and in that training, I first talked about my experiences in foster care. But actually, before that, I had to talk about the abuse that led me into foster care. A lot of people, when they talk about foster care, they talk about, you know, the entry point and then them being in the system. But there's this whole world, this whole life, years and years of trauma that a child goes through. So by the time they enter foster care, they have gone through so much. And yet when a lot of workers I found looked at me when I entered when I was 14, they were looking at me like a regular 14-year-old with some maybe mental health problems, and that's it. Not taking into account the years of trauma and homelessness that I experienced. And so when I entered foster care at age 14, I didn't know anything about the foster care system. And from my perspective as a child, I was surrounded by a lot of, you know, adults, some very well-meaning, but a lot of adults with badges and, you know, asking all these personal questions and about my life and my personal questions of my family, but not like checking in on my well-being. You know, there was no like, hey, I can't imagine what you're going through, but, you know, this is a lot that you're taking in. There was none of that. It was just like checking boxes. Okay, so tell us about your family history. Was there alcoholism? It was just kind of like, you know, very procedural and very cold and formal, the whole process of entering foster care and living and growing up in foster care. And I bounced around 14 different times in the span of 4 years. And usually when I tell people that, they immediately think, oh my God, what did you do? You were this problem child. Actually, a lot of the places I was in were, you know, temporary, meaning there was only a 30-day holding or 90 days, or there were just other circumstances beyond my control, like one foster home. My foster father died of natural causes. He was really old. He was like 80-something. And then the mother just, you know, was so overwhelmed and just didn't want me and my sister anymore. Not because we did anything, but, you know, she broke down as a person. In another home, you know, I wasn't the right religion. And another home, I got into one argument with the biological daughter. You know, so there's all these other variables as to why I moved around so much, but it didn't matter to the person who just scanned the sheet, the court report summary of me. They just saw 14 moves and just immediately, you know, came to the conclusion that, oh, I must be a problem child. When in fact, I was actually on honor roll at every school I went to. I was well behaved in all my group homes. So, but that part, that kind of got lost. They just saw how many moves, you know, and, you know, a lot of social workers are really busy. It really takes time to really read my story or even talk to me like a person. That was what I remember feeling. And I thought, you know, if I come out of this alive, because I was also very depressed, you know, and I was into self-harm. I thought, you know, if I come out of this and I work on healing and become a whole person, I definitely want to give feedback. And that's what I do now. With trainings, and I worked in the county system, and now I serve on a board of directors helping transition each show. Mm-hmm. And so would you like to know what did help as opposed to just what didn't help?
Yes.
Okay. What did help is it was very few and far between, but they do exist. There are, you know, people who did sit down and saw beyond the court report and said, hey, how are you doing? What are you into? What gets you through the day? This must be a lot, you know, showing genuine empathy and sitting down and asking me specific questions and then remembering our conversation. So the next time they talked to me, they would recall, hey, wait a minute, I thought you were doing really well in English. Now you're falling behind. What's going on? They showed an interest in me. They remembered my birthday. They were asking me questions about my future. What are you going to do when you turn 18? You know, and they got me thinking about the future instead of the day-to-day, which is very common in foster care because we're in survival mode. We only see what's in front of us in the next day, you know, or if you have a sibling, you're constantly worried if you're going to be separated, if you get into one argument, which was a constant threat. When I had a sibling, she was 2 years younger than me, that was constantly threatened against me. You better behave or we'll separate you and your sister, you know? And so what helped is when I did come across social workers, or, you know, one time I had a probation officer who said, you know, I never see you speak up in court. Why don't you write down your version of events and why a placement failed and what you would like to see happen to your case? So mm-hmm. I was being encouraged to self-advocate. That never happened before. And thank God I did, because in that one situation, the judge ruled in my favor because the things that I brought up in my letter warranted an investigation, and they saw that I was right, you know, that I was being neglected. I never got therapy, even though I've asked for it. I got good grades. You know, if a worker or a judge just relied solely on the testimony of a social worker who dips in and out and is not really in the home seeing things, or relying on a foster parent that the county relies on taking kids off their hands, and that person's testimony, then I would have been in a different position. But because the probation officer encouraged me to write down why a placement failed from my perspective, and the judge read my letter and actually followed through and said, hey, there's more to the story than what I've been told at this point. Let's look into this. That made the biggest difference in the world and changed the trajectory of my life. So there's that. And there's also when I had an ILSP worker come into my, I was in the last group home. Now, keep in mind, I bounced around so many times, never been a problem issue, you know, not been a problem child. But I got into a fight because some girl was picking on my sister. She was coming after her, and I defended my sister. And then I said, oh, great, now I have a record. You know, years without, I've never had a violent background. This other kid did. And I was defending my sister. But my social worker said, look, I've been around. You are bound to get into this situation. You were in endlessly provocative situations. And so she listened to me, and she's like, I know you're a really good kid. You know, she could have taken the position that another social worker, oh, this is more paperwork for me. I don't want to hear your side. I just, you know, I'm moving you to the most restrictive placement there possibly could be, which has happened. I've had that happen prior to my last social worker. But the original situation, I didn't get into a physical fight. It was just an argument. Mm-hmm. But because I got into an argument, she's like, you know what, you're causing me too many problems. So she took that position. But my last social worker is like, you know what, I've been around, I've seen it all. You know, you just need to be in an environment that, you know, is not so provocative, mm-hmm. and you need stability. And she was right, because once I got that, I thrived for years, you know. And I had an ILST worker during that time say, you know, ask me what was checking in, saying, hey, how come you seem so depressed? And I said, I just got into a fight. Now I'm going to face probably juvenile hall, and now no one's ever going to want me. And mm-hmm. he just gave me a speech like, you know, yes, you shouldn't have gotten to a fight. I don't know all the circumstances. I'm sure you have your side. The other person has their side. But it's really up to you to continue to go down this path or make adjustments now and try to work for the life you always want to have. You know, just that one conversation made a significant difference. Mm-hmm. So those are just a few instances I can think of on top of my head of how my life has been changed by people in the system.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Georgette. That was so powerful. I just wanted to hear that because oftentimes when people focus on trauma or the foster care system, the children who have already been through the system, who might not have gotten a lot of the support that these new initiatives address, and your voice is important because you're a part of that. And I just wanted our constituents and everybody who's doing this great work to just know your story. Now, make sure we're getting ready to move on, but I want to make sure you know that I want people to know how to find you, how to get your book so they can get into it like me and know this story in its fullness and any way they can reach out to you to possibly bring you to them?
Thank you so much for that. Yeah, so my official website is www.georgettetodd.com. So it's my full name, so GEORGETTETODD. .com, and I can email it to you and Dan, so you can send it out to everybody, but that's the best way. That has all my information on there and what the work that I do. And to get my book, it's Foster Girl, a Memoir on Amazon.com. So Foster Girl, a Memoir.
Yeah. Both of those links are also on the announcement that was sent out, Georgette. So anybody that got to this call by way of a Peace Alliance email, you can go back to that email and you'll see both of those links. Thank you, Georgette. I want to ask you a question, and then I also want to open it up for other folks to ask questions as well. So if you have a question, you can raise your hand. If you're online, there should be a raise hand option on your screen. If you don't see raise hand, there's probably a little menu icon, the three bars, and you click the menu and you can raise your hand. If you're on your phone and you want to raise your hand, it's *9 that'll raise your hand. So my question for you is, part of what I heard, Georgette, was that early on there was a lack of awareness, it sounded like, about trauma, that people may have kind of assumed that you're just sort of a normal kid. I mean, who knows what normal is, you know, life, but just that, you know, they could sort of listen to you, talk to you as they would most, you know, 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds, wherever you were at the time, and that there was an awareness about the impacts of trauma that was really missing. I'm wondering, moving from being in the system to working in the system and working at, you know, the different levels, do you see that changing at all? Do you see a growth in trauma awareness or trauma-informed awareness?
I definitely do see that. When I was working in Alameda County, I went to with social workers trauma informed training, you know, so, and I don't know if the social workers that I had, you know, years, decade plus, you know, earlier than that, had that same training. I don't think they did, because I have friends who, you know, used to be division directors of, you know, in foster care services, and they said, no, they didn't always have that training. It's fairly new. Mm-hmm. So I think that lack of awareness, you know, it's not the fault of the social worker, obviously. You only do what you know and do the best that you can. And also, I don't think anybody, quote unquote, bad, like, comes into this line of work. You know, you clearly want to help if you know, you have a good heart, but I think sometimes, you know, I'm just telling you from the child's perspective, which, you know, I didn't have that awareness. I'm not thinking about the social worker and what trainings they had. I was just going on by how they treated me. But right. Yeah, that's a good point that you brought up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, just in case when we're done with sort of question and answer a little bit later, we're going to move into talking about the action. You're welcome to stick with us, but if you have other things that you need to do, we understand. But I just want to let you know that the bill that we're looking at supporting in tonight's action would fund a lot of grant dollars and further research and support to trauma-informed understandings and trainings and work in communities across the country. So we're really trying to help things move in that direction with our action this month.
I'm going to actually stay on the call. I would love to hear about it. I was reading up on it right before the call, and I'm very interested. So I'd love to hear what you guys say and learn more about it. Mm-hmm. I would just want to lastly add about my book, how it's different from the other foster care books out there. My book actually includes actual court documents. From my case file. It's included in my memoir. I felt that it was really important to include that as a story. And so you see how the system tracks me and I just really wanted to give the reader the perspective of the child. What's it like growing up in the foster care system? And my book achieves that. So,
yes, it does.
Gotcha.
I thought that was missing in all the books that I was reading about foster care. So I thought it was, you know, glossed over. There's like different narratives. It was focused on the emotional development. I mean, that's in there too, but I really wanted to give the average reader who didn't know anything about foster care, this is what it's like. And for those who work in foster care, here are some more things you probably don't know, like what conversations we are having in the bathroom when no staff are around, things like that, you know? What goes through our mind when we're in the courtroom surrounded by well-dressed professionals listening into our business? What's going through us? So that's why I felt the calling to write this book. Mm-hmm. And I'll stop there.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. That really gives me a sense. To me, it speaks of like a sense of the texture, like seeing the court documents really kind of plugs you into what is the week to week, month to month experience of somebody whose life is so mediated by what's decided in a courtroom of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who, as you said, many of them are very well-meaning, well-intentioned. It's just, this is the structure that we have, and this is the awareness that we have, and this is what it's like for a child. I'm not seeing any hands raised. I know sometimes people have difficulty with the technology, or the app's not the same for every computer. So I'm going to allow people to unmute themselves in case somebody is wanting to speak and not able to raise their hand right now. So you should now have the ability to unmute yourself. I see a hand is up, actually. So I'm going to unmute. The phone number is area code 773. Go ahead. Your mic is open.
Hi. So my question doesn't involve a foster care situation, but I do have a question as to how to work with my daughter, actually. It's a long, complicated story, but at this point now, she's no longer with me. She tried being at her father's for, you know, since she was 16, and that did not work out. And her dad's been pretty punitive with some of her behaviors. She had trouble adjusting in high school and got into drugs and alcohol and, you know, boys prematurely. And at this point, I mean, I've gone with her to several different counselors. This last one, who she is no longer seeing, but it's still, I still go talk to him. So I'm trying to understand what can I do. She doesn't want help, but yet it's like she's gone through trauma after trauma. With her dad, he kicked her out of his home when he found out some of the things she was doing. And he doesn't allow her to see her sister, her half-sister. And he had fought for custody and got it because she agreed to go with him. She's always wanted his approval, his attention, and he told her he would buy her a car, get her a dog, all these things. This was all when she was 16. When she moved in with him, he allowed her to do whatever she wanted. And, you know, he's very well off financially, but she ended up going to like inner city areas in Chicago and felt comfortable and is now staying with her boyfriend and his family in an inner city area. It's just really, a lot of this was just shocking for me. I just didn't understand it. And I have to say, I was really, I identified with some of what you were saying. with people not fully getting, you know, what's really going on. And I didn't. I knew to ask her about her well-being, but I couldn't always hear and see her. And so I resorted out of fear to having, you know, more rules and, you know, you can't hang out with those friends. And so it's like I did the opposite. Her dad let her do whatever she wanted and stay out till whatever hours and hang out with these crowds. And he was never there for her. Me, it's like I was a helicopter mom, always worried about her. And I learned the hard way I should not have put down some of the things that her dad was doing or not doing for her, because she got angry with me at some point saying, "That's my dad," which I just wanted her to know it wasn't her. He historically has had a lot of issues and childhood issues, et cetera. But I now learned, you know what? Despite that, she would have realized that on her own at some point. And yeah, I should not have criticized a lot of what he was doing or not being there for her. And now I'm working with her, listening to her and what she wants, and agreeing to, okay, fine, you can spend the weekends at your boyfriend's family's house. She's 17. She'll be 18 in October. That was never like me before, but that's where she feels comfortable. She was staying at my parents, going to a school in the suburbs for the school year, but this summer she's at her boyfriend's. Anyway, sorry, I'm taking too long. So what I'm resorting to now is just, okay, here are all your options. And with school, here are all your options. And I want to support you, you know, and this is your life. Here are the options. I may give her my opinion, but I'm letting her know it's up to her to choose. Mm-hmm. Because she was skipping school for a while there too. And historically she was an A student, but with all the things she's been through in the last 2 years, it's just, you know, she really couldn't do it this year. And I didn't want to focus on school. I wanted to focus on her well-being. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm getting it more now, like, oh my gosh, this has been trauma. I wasn't even realizing the degree that all this was traumatic, and getting kicked out of school, traumatic. And then her working hard to go back to the school she got kicked out of. And when she returned, her friends turned against her. So that's traumatic. And so just seeing her and hearing her now and giving her her options, and I told her I do want her to come back home. I think that's in her best interest. But I also know she wants freedom. And so, yeah, just what would your advice to me be?
It sounds like you're already doing it, and I know that's hard to hear because you're not getting the results that you would want, you know, and I'm speaking from somebody who's been on your side. I've tried to help people in my sister, namely, who I'm now, she lost her child and I'm now fostering, you know, and you see people make decisions that are not in their best interest, and you show your unwavering support and love, unconditional love, and you give them options and you have the talk with them. It's just it's that whole thing. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And it's like, oh, I wish I can jump in your body and make these decisions for you. I'm doing everything I can. Why aren't you? Oh, you know, it's very hard and frustrating to hear. I would just say for you to continue to do, sounds like you're doing what you need to do. by just being there for her, being a source of support and resource, she is going to continue making mistakes. She might leave the boyfriend. She's going to argue with her boyfriend at some point, and she's going to want to be away from him. And so she may want to come to you. But then as soon as you lay down, you know, the rules and, you know, which kids need, young people need, you know, then she may feel stifled and just go, oh, I need my freedom. And then she'll just bounce back to somewhere else. You know, all I can say is just be a constant presence for her. Be mindful. She is going to make mistakes, especially at 17, 18. I don't know many 17, 18 year olds, even outside the foster care system, who, you know, is so well-rounded and has it all together. Yeah, I know a lot of 17 and 18 year olds who had, you know, I don't want to say perfect lives, but two parent household, you know, upbringing, and they're going to private schools, and then they're drinking and smoking. You know what I mean? Like, it's also an age thing as well, a developmental thing that's also there. But yes, trauma does, is added to the equation. I would just say, just continue to be a source of support, because she might be doing testing too, you know, and it sounds like she needs a parent in her life. And it doesn't sound like her dad was like a friend, not a parent, sounds like to me. So be that role model that she needs.
Yeah. I mean, he ended up, you know, he just didn't want to pay child support, and which he told her that's why he filed for things. And now he's moved out of state.
Sounds like my dad. Yeah. Sounds exactly like my dad. So yeah. She may not appreciate you now, but she will, trust me. You are putting in pennies, but pennies add up to dollars. So, just hang in there and just be the rock that she needs. And when she crashes, she's a water crashing into you, just stay steady as a rock. And then at the same time, I want you to take care of yourself and have your support system in place so you can remain a rock.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, thank you for bringing that up. I was depleted for a while there, especially when I was watching her so closely. You know, working with some expert counselor who it was so hard, and making sure she didn't run away again, you know, from my parents. I was there for a couple months, and it was just depleting. She ended up jumping out of the second floor window, you know.
Yeah.
It was really something else. But yeah, after that, I just came home and I regained my strength and was part of a, you know, supported group. So now after all that, yes, I can see her more. I have my strength. I can hear her. I'm just sending her text messages every week consistently, whether she responds or not.
Perfect. That's really good. That's really good. And also, I mean, she needs to see what normalcy is like. You know, she needs to see steadiness. She needs to have that frame of reference, and that's the role you provide. And she also needs to learn, this is what I'm learning with my niece, who I'm taking care of. You know, a lot of people are pain avoiding or pleasure seeking, especially at, you know, her age. And the thing about it is, you can never, problems are a part of life. It's learning to master this coping skills, you know, when problems do come. That's where the growth is. And so being made aware of these tools that exist. I mean, maybe you want to brush up on that language as well. But really, I'm learning that as well with my niece. You know, you got to learn how to deal with problems as they come, because they will come, you know. And, you know, you get into an argument, you hear things you don't want to hear. So what do you do? Just, you know, jump out of it. You know, do you just like throw yourself and want to kill yourself every time there's a problem? You know, be so dramatic. Like, okay, that's a way. Here's another way to approach things. Let's break it down, bite size. It's step by step. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, yeah, I can go on about this, but I will just say being the steady, stable, consistent figure that she needs is doing so much. You have no idea. And I had that with my last foster mother. She was that for me.
Okay.
And please take care of yourself too in the process, because you sound like you have such a big heart and you take it in so much. And that could, you know, you can't offer someone a sip of water if your glass is empty. Mm-hmm. So you need to fill that water in however which way you do it, through your own support system. But really take care of yourself.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Dan, can I just jump in for a quick second? I just wanted to offer my support too to you, because being a mother and having a child that A, does not meet the initial expectation of greatness that we have for them. And I'm simply, we want our children to thrive. We want them to be safe. We want them to be happy. We want them to go out in the world and do great things. And sometimes when our children are impacted by trauma, it takes a while for them to come back and see their own beauty. And what I really appreciate about you is how you're reflecting your love for her, and that is her beauty, and she constantly keeps seeing it. And one day, believe it or not, she's just going to see it as herself and know that you have been just trying to help her see herself. And it looks like it looks in its own way. The other piece that I want to add, as a mother, we typically have an expression of grief, and that's a part of the fear, and it can become pathological. It can become very chronic, which can lead into other situations like depression or just a sense of hopelessness, which also puts us back into depression, or chronic grief, which is another term for depression. So this is an opportunity for you to possibly invite yourself to a level of forgiveness for yourself. You did the best you could do with what you knew, and you're still learning that. We all are. Everyone on this planet is learning how to open their heart, to be more loving, to be more compassionate, to be more forgiving, to be more understanding. So just know you're not a bad mom. You're a person, a human being who has a humanity, who has a love for a creation that came through you, and you choose not to helicopter. You're doing what you can to the planet to do, to guard, to protect, to love, to nurture. And that's how it just looks for you. So just, I send you so much love and light, and I appreciate you for being so authentic and transparent and allowing yourself to be vulnerable right here and now in this space where you can be held, because you are held. And you can gladly reach out to me if you want to ever talk and just communicate, because I really understand that walk in more ways. I don't want to take up time to talk about it, but I'm open to share my story with you as a mother.
Thank you so much. I would definitely appreciate that. Would I get your information from the email that was sent today?
We'll make sure it happens.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's Ngozi, Ngozi at peacealliance.org.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, pleasure. To make sure that's out there.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you guys. I echo that. I really appreciate your openness and sharing what's going on with you. It's really an honor that you shared that trust with us, and really wish you well. And I think everyone on the call probably joins me in holding that in our hearts. And thank you, Georgette, for your presence and presence with this, with your time with us. And I understand you're going to stick with us. That's great.
Yeah.
We're going to move into sort of the next thing on our agenda. Before we dive into the Rise from Trauma bill, which, as I said, I'm excited to get into. Before we do that, I'm going to welcome Nancy Merritt, one of our council leads. Nancy is holding this position and has been leading this work for years, going on decades now, is the promotion of a Department of Peacebuilding. So a U.S. Department of Peacebuilding would promote healing in various areas of life, from homes to schools to neighborhoods to internationally. And Nancy is here with an update. Going to unmute her, and we'll hear what she has to tell us about the campaign to create a U.S. Department of Peacebuilding. H.R. 1111 is the bill that's in the House of Representatives. Nancy?
Oh, okay. Well, I wanted to thank Georgette and Yelena and the caller. Everything you're talking about is what we're working on as far as creating a more peaceful world. And we have a lot of different things going on with the Department of Peacebuilding right now. I just sent out earlier today an e-blast about the city of San Diego. Has now joined 45 other cities and counties in the country as an endorser of the Department of Peacebuilding bill. We went down to San Diego about a month and a half ago for this Peacebuilding Advocacy Days. And it just illustrated to me how important it is to have a caring adult in people's lives. The folks in San Diego have been working on a Department of Peacebuilding and other aspects of peacebuilding since 2004. And in about 2008, I'd say, they joined with Kids for Peace in San Diego. And they've done all kinds of actions every year, International Day of Peace, Martin Luther King Day, visiting Congress people, all kinds of stuff like that, and been joined in these actions by an amazing group of adults, like principals from several schools, a woman from the San Diego Board of Education, others from the Peace Alliance down south in San Diego. And this is a real honor that they set aside this day. And so I hope you take a little while to read that e-blast, and there's a couple of stories associated with it. But we're very happy about this. This is the first time a city has signed on in quite a few years for Department of Peacebuilding. So we hope it's the beginning of something, a trend. And then the bill itself, we now have 27 co-sponsors. Exciting news is just recently two freshmen, Congressperson Deb Holland from New Mexico and Ilhan Omar, signed on. And in California, if we have time, I'd love Geraldine to talk about this, but in California, we've been sponsoring a bill called Office for Healthy and Safe Communities, which focuses on violence prevention and trauma, the trauma aspect of that. And today it passed out of the state Senate Public Safety Committee. So this is the fifth committee it's passed through. Now it has to go to the Senate. I think it has to go to an Appropriations Committee, then the Senate floor, then Governor Newsom. So we've already been through quite a number of steps, and we're pretty excited about that. And then in September, we go to Washington, D.C. to advocate for peace building and the Department of Peace Building. There's a sign-up sheet on the webpage. So you go to the Peace Alliance webpage and then go to the Department of Peace Building page, and you'll see information about registration and dates and all that stuff. So we'll be on Capitol Hill probably September 23rd to 26th, maybe one more day. I haven't quite decided. But those are the main things. We have a lot of other things going on, but these are the kind of actions that we've completed or moved along in the last little while. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Nancy. And let's see if we can hit the things that are still on our agenda to cover. And if we have a few minutes at the end, then maybe we can come back to Geraldine for that state bill in California on the state office. That's exciting stuff. I just want to make sure we have a little bit of time to cover this action and have some shares from the field. So thanks for that. So now I want to bring folks' attention. I'm going to go ahead and mute you because I'm hearing some background. To that action sheet, as I mentioned, everybody who was registered for the call at least an hour before should have received an email with a link to this action sheet. So it's, as usual, action sheet is 2 pages, front and back, if you print it out. And on the first page, sort of how you take the action, and then some background. And on the second page is more background about the bill. So I'm wondering if there's anybody who feels like reading out loud. There's some parts of the action sheet that I would love to hear read out loud. Anybody feels like adding your voice into the mix? It's just sometimes nice to hear other people. And it sort of focuses attention a little bit differently if somebody among you is reading what's on this sheet. It's like, oh, what's on that sheet? What's going on there? So anybody feel like reading aloud to us from the action sheet, which everybody who's on the call should have in your inbox? Looking for a raised hand. All right. I'm going to lower the hand that was raised before because that was something else. So go ahead and raise your hand or unmute yourself if you would like to read aloud from the action sheet. And seeing no one so far, I'm just going to go ahead and do it myself. Who knows? Maybe that's what's meant to be tonight. I'll accept it. So as I said, on the action sheet at the top, it's some basic instructions for how to take this action. We're asking folks to call your members of Congress and share a message and follow up about this new bill. This is a bill that was introduced on June 10th. It's called the Rise from Trauma Act. And RISE is an acronym. You know, Congress loves acronyms. It stands for Resilience, Investment, Support, and Expansion. So Resilience, Investment, Support, and Expansion from Trauma Act. And it's intended, I'm partly reading from excerpts from Dick Durbin's website. He's one of the initial co-sponsors. Intended to help build the trauma-informed workforce and increase resources for communities to support children who have experienced trauma. So it's just what we were talking about. There's a rise in awareness of trauma-informed care. And this bill, if you look at the back of the action sheet, the second paragraph down, this bill follows a 15-month GAO investigation. That's the General Accounting Office investigation looking into federal initiatives to address trauma. So they found that there was some of the problems were a high staff turnover, lack of leadership support, lack of training for clinicians and workers, and inconsistent, insufficient funding sources. Those were some of the problems with the trauma-informed care that was already going on. So people who work in the field probably, I can see Ngozi nodding her head, like, yeah, that's what's going on. And this bill, it's bipartisan. It was introduced by 4 senators, 2 Democrats and 2 Republicans in the Senate, and 2 House members, 1 Democrat and 1 Republican in the House. So it's got bipartisan initial support. It, for folks that have looked at this action sheet or looked at the bill at all, if you've been with the Peace Alliance for more than a couple of years, you probably remember the Youth Promise Act. Mm-hmm. That was an important bill that we were making a priority. It's in some ways similar to the Youth Promise Act in that it supports community coalitions. One of the things it does, it supports community coalitions to address the impact of trauma. So a county or a city or a state can write for a grant under this package of grant opportunities to say, here's what our trauma-informed care needs to look like in our city, in our state, in our town. And then there are, the bill lists some possibilities for the kinds of programs that would address it. Possibilities include social emotional learning programs, parent-child programs, and other multi-generational approaches. So not just working with children, working with parents, working with grandparents, with social emotional learning. It's like, how do we learn to express our feelings? How do we become more sensitive and aware and do this healing work? So as you can probably tell, I'm really excited about this bill. I feel like this is learning. We're on this learning curve. The whole culture, the country has been figuring out that people who experience trauma, which is pretty much all of us, you know, there's been this ACEs study that shows that something like 88% of the population has had at least one early childhood traumatic experience. And then something like 60% have had two, and it goes up, you know, for, you know, there's, if you've had two, then it's more than likely you've had three or more. So basically they start to add up, and these result in people who are more easily triggered when there's high stress. So a lot of us walk around with reactions going on to early trauma. And this is the beginning of our culture acknowledging it on an institutional level, on the governmental level, to say there are tools, there are techniques, there are systems that can change. And here's the beginning of that program. So our request is find your member of Congress. If you look at the top of the action sheet, there's the phone number for the Congressional Switchboard. Many of you have already begun, have been cultivating relationships with your members of Congress. You can find out who they are. If you don't already know who your representative is, there's a link on the PDF to find your representative. You could always just Google, who is my congressional representative, and we'll get to the right link. And share the message that you would like your member of Congress, your House member, your senators to co-sponsor this bill. Become an initial co-sponsor. The only co-sponsors so far are those that initially introduced it. So the field is wide open for new co-sponsors. And then plan to follow up. Find out, you know, whoever you talk to, if it's a congressional aide, some assistant, legislative assistant, whoever it is, get an email address for them, get a phone number, a way that you can contact them later and say, hey, you know, what happened with that thing? How's it going now? It's all about building relationship. So I would love for somebody, let me see what time it is. Oh, we got 2 minutes. So we don't really have time for a role play and field chairs in 2 minutes, but just imagine that I had asked somebody to role play this. If I said, I want somebody to pretend to call your member of Congress, just think about how you would have done it. Hi, I'm a constituent. I care about this bill, the Rise from Trauma bill. I want my legislator to become a co-sponsor. That simple. And how can I follow up with you? That's pretty much how it would go. It's sort of all on the action sheet. If you have questions, dan@peacealliance.org. And in the 1 minute we have left, let's see if anybody has anything they want to share about what's going on in your part of the world. Or if you have questions about other stuff that's come up on the call, happy to hear it. So you have the ability to unmute yourself individually if you have a question or if there's something you want to share in your peace-building world, whether in your community, your neighborhood, your school, or your congressional offices. Anything that anybody has they want to let us know about? Or ask if you have a question left over. Georgette Todd is still with us, as is Ngozi and Nancy. So if you have questions about anything that you've heard, you've got about 30 seconds to ask and have it answered. Okay, I'm seeing no hands going up and nobody's getting unmuted. So it's the top of the hour. I'm going to share a quote. And again, you can reach, and before I do that, you can reach Ngozi. It's N as in Nancy, N-G-O-Z-I @peacealliance.org. You can reach Nancy at nancy@peacealliance.org to learn more about the Department of Peacebuilding campaign or the lobby days in September. You can reach me, Dan, at peacealliance.org to talk about working with members of Congress and doing this advocacy. And the quote I have for you is actually by Tori Amos, singer-songwriter, piano player, who said, healing takes courage, and we all have courage, even if we have to dig a little to find it. So I'm going to unmute everybody so you can say good evening or farewell or anything you want to say. Thank you all so much for joining us. You can download the podcast, the recording podcast of this call and all the rest of our calls at peacealliance.org under the Deep Advocacy tab. And I look forward to talking with you again another month. Mm-hmm. Everybody's unmuted. Thanks and good night.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. The peace of mind. But in my spirit, healing centers in every community.